Welcome to Smash to Pieces, a casual walk through the history of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate roster. My name is Joe.
And my name is Matt.
And if you're new here, what we are doing on this show is we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate from 1984's Duck Hunt to 2017's Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And today's game is representing fighter number 36. It is our final Super Nintendo game, released in 1994, Donkey Kong Country. It's representing Diddy Kong. I didn't say who the fighter was, just said 36.
Yo, it's weird to not be talking about Earthbound.
Yeah, kind of.
I kind of forgot that this show wasn't about Earthbound for a while.
So after you finished DK, after we both finished this game in one go, my roommate was like sitting in my room. He was like, I forgot you could do that. Like, I forgot you could complete games that fast.
We used to do that all the time. Remember, it was like, it wasn't until our 10th game that that we had a single part two.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that weird? Everything else was beaten in one. I think Kid Icarus, you needed a second session for that. And I needed a second session for Mario World. And that's it.
Mario 2 also had second sessions, I think.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But I'm like, talking still, just like podcast parts.
Those, yeah, that's true. But like, ooh. I don't know, it's weird. It feels really weird. But nevertheless, we are talking about a different game that's not called Earthbound. And it's a different genre. And again, it's our last Super Nintendo game. That we played 5 Super Nintendo games, and that's it. I'm pretty sure.
Was it only 5?
Mario World, Link to the Past.
Technically, we both played Mario 2 on Super Nintendo.
Technically, but I'm not going to count that. I'm not going to count Street Fighter 2 either, even though we did play that on a Super Nintendo. I'm talking strictly Super Nintendo games, like games made specifically for the Super Nintendo. So you got Mario World, Link to the Past, Super Metroid, Earthbound, Donkey Kong Country. That's 5. That's it.
Yeah.
An entire era done in 5 games.
Well, I guess clearly the Super Nintendo must not have been very good.
Yeah, totally. It's you know what was good? The NES, the game we played multiple, like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, 7 games for. NES must be better.
Really, the reason for it is that it's because there's rumors that Super Nintendo games are coming to the Switch Online, and God forbid Switch Online be useful to us in this show.
Yeah. We've brought this up in other places before, but literally right when we finished Kirby, a week later, Kirby got added to the Nintendo Switch Online. Now that we're finishing Super Nintendo, it's rumored that Super Nintendo games are coming to Switch. What?
Oh, it's worse than that. It's like the when the NES service launched, we looked at it and was like, oh, we've played Ice Climber already. We've played Kid Icarus already. None of the games here are stuff that we still have upcoming. Oh well. Then we played Kirby, and then they added Kirby.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about the game we're here to talk about, Donkey Kong Country, which is, of course, a very historically significant game. It kind of started the era of Rare being the king for years. So I told the story on the preview section of the last episode. They showed off their technology to take 3D models and convert them into 2D sprites and put them on the Super Nintendo. The 3D models, I believe, supplied by Silicon Graphics. They showed that technology to Nintendo, and Nintendo was so impressed that they basically handed them a list of their properties and said, pick one, make a game for us.
That's like a big risk, too.
Yeah, that's a
huge risk. They just gave them carte blanche with all of those properties.
Yeah, and for some weird reason, they picked Donkey Kong. I think it's speculated that the game they were working on already had a jungle theme anyways, so they decided to go with the character that would most likely live in the jungle.
Path of least resistance.
Yeah, I don't think there's like an official source on that, but it would make sense to me if that was the case. And so Donkey Kong Country came out on the Super Nintendo in 1994, and it hit massive critical acclaim. It is the first game in a very, very well-known Super Nintendo trilogy, basically turned Donkey Kong into what we know today. Also, weirdly enough, turned Yoshi into what we know today. Do you happen to know why?
Excuse me?
So when Miyamoto was making Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island, Nintendo was like, hey, you know that game you're making? Could you make it look like Donkey Kong Country? And Miyamoto was kind of outspokenly not a fan of how Donkey Kong Country looked. And he was like, no. And to spite you further, now all the graphics look like it's drawn with crayons, which established how Yoshi's aesthetic would go even like into today.
Cool.
So in a way, Donkey Kong Country is also responsible for that.
Jeez, okay.
So this game had some reaching influence. It also introduced Diddy Kong. It introduced King Karool. It introduced Cranky Kong, Funky Kong, Candy Kong, whole slew of enemies. And yeah, it just created Donkey Kong as we know him today, which is kind of a cool story. And unfortunately, this is kind of a hot take. I think the game's just okay.
It is a foundation, definitely. Of the SNES trilogy, I've never played the others. This was my first time playing any of the SNES Donkey Kong Country games. But I have played Returns and Tropical Freeze. From there, what I can tell is they took the framework of this game and improved upon it. And I imagine Country 2 and Country 3 did that first. It wasn't like there was no good games in the trilogy until Returns. I just didn't play any of them.
Country 2 is considered a vastly better game. Or not maybe, maybe not vastly, but it is considered a better game. It is the most popular game in the trilogy. I believe 3 is mostly disliked and or people are apathetic towards it.
And I see the foundations of a great game here, but it still needs just a little extra work to get there. Like, the actual controls and physics and everything, they were really solid, bordering on incredible. But the levels that you did them in were forgettable, I think. And maybe just part of that was that they were visually all very samey. Which, again, with stuff on the Super Nintendo, I don't know how much you can blame it for that. Especially with the crazy new technology that they were working with, that they must have taken an immense amount of time just to figure out how to do it. But on the whole, I wouldn't really say I can remember any individual level.
I remember a couple. Mostly, not really any where I'm like, oh man, yeah, that level was super good. The levels I generally remember are the ones that are like, this could have been better, or I'm not a fan of this. I think, though, the one that I do remember is, I mentioned this on my stream, and I think I told you this, where it was like, this game, depending on who you ask, is either famous or infamous for its minecart levels, except then, what I didn't realize is there's only two of them in the entire game. I thought there'd be more.
Yeah, which is weird. And the minecart levels in Returns are, like, the best thing. And then you go to this game, it's like, oh, there's one, and it's kind of okay. And then there's another, and it's kind of not okay. And that's it. We're done.
Yeah, it's weird. People talk about the minecart levels of Donkey Kong Country a lot. And so I expected there to be, like, four of them, not two. And the first one is pretty fun. I like the first one. I like the feeling of jumping with the minecart. It's the change in the second one where it's like, oh, now you jump out of the minecart, which, first of all, I don't actually understand why they made that change. And second of all, it's just not nearly as fun or satisfying. I don't know. I like the first minecart level. I'm not a huge fan of the second one. From the little I was able to see of your stream, you were unfortunately streaming while I was recording something else for most of it. But from what I saw of your stream, you seem to imply you didn't like the rocket barrels.
Are those considered rocket barrels?
Yeah.
I thought rocket barrels were like the jetpacks.
I mean, they can't. I guess those would be. What would they be called? Barrel cannons, I guess.
Yeah, the barrel cannons, I don't like them at all.
I love the barrel cannons. They're my favorite part of the game.
they're my least favorite part of the game, and the only part of the game that I was really thinking was outright bad.
Interesting. Do you have, like, a reasoning behind that?
I think that, like, the problem with a lot of them is that I didn't have a feel for the timing of, like, the ones that, like, the auto-shoot ones, the auto-fire ones. And the game would put me in positions where I had to time a moving barrel that I was in against a stationary auto-fire barrel that would then shoot me into another moving barrel. It was stuff like that that I think it was introducing too rapidly with too many moving parts, and I didn't get a feel for the timing of any of it. And it just, it was more frustrating than it was, than it felt like a challenge. Like, it was kind of just, at the best of times, it was just sit around and wait for like a full minute for the perfect pattern to come around.
That, I think I get, yeah, I get where you're coming from on that pretty much 100%. Mostly because, yeah, I think I did have a couple of problems a couple of times where it was just like, where it was just, oh, I didn't realize that I would have to account for the barrel turning around before it fired. Oh, I learned that now that I'm dead. Okay, well, all right, sure. That kind of thing. I don't know. I love the barrel cannons. I've always been a big fan of them since I was a kid. It just feels kind of satisfying to get it right, is the thing. But I absolutely can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, it was. I liked the rest of the game because I felt like the controls and everything were really solid otherwise. But that was the one point where I felt like it just, like, the fundamentals weren't solid.
I believe it gets better. That's another example of something that gets better in the, like, later games. Same with water levels. I'm not a huge fan of water levels.
The water levels in this game were all right.
I think
they were unique.
My favorite water level was, judging by your reaction, your least favorite, which was the one where you have to run away from the octopi. I don't know why I like that so much.
I don't know, man. That one was just...
That good, huh?
Yeah. That's how I feel about it, thinking back to it. It required more precision than I felt like those levels had.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem I had overall with all the underwater levels, is that there doesn't feel like enough... Like, there's not really a way to reposition yourself very accurately, and yet it requires you to, like, you gotta weave in between stuff all the time, and yet it's like asking you to, if you press down, you're gonna go down really fast, but you're going down no matter what, and if you press A at any point, you're going to go like a full 2 inches up, and there's, it just feels like there's very little control over either of the characters while swimming. I don't know. I don't like the water levels, but I remember them being a little bit better in 2. It has been years since I last played 2. I do remember that 2 is way harder than DK Country 1. To be
probably
fair.
Probably a little better for that. More solid level design and everything.
It's also just got a lot more variety in its levels, honestly. It added things like being able to throw the other Kong. It added more,
which
animals.
Was not in this one.
Not in this one. It added new animal friends that actually had more functionality than just they go, because all three of the animals in this game, whether it's Rambi the Rhino, who's the only one who stuck around, Winky the Frog, Espresso the Ostrich, or On Guard the Swordfish, who also shows up. Actually, yeah, he shows up again too a lot. He's in DK64, and so is Rambi. Those are the only two in DK64. But all of the animals in this game are just sort of, you ride them, and that's,
yeah. And
really,
I didn't even really care for them at all, to be honest.
Meanwhile, DK Country 2 adds like it adds a spider. I think he's in 2. I might be thinking of 3 because I know there's an elephant in 3 named Ellie who can like suck up water and. They all have their own, like, gimmicks. Like, the spider can shoot web platforms and stuff. They all feel unique and actually useful in the levels in which the game gives them to you. Meanwhile, all of the animals in this game just sort of feel like the same mount with a different skin and maybe one little ability that they can do that the others can, like Espresso being able to fly or Winky being able to kill the zingers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's also something I think is very heavily improved in 2. The graphics look a little bit less muddy in 2, but that might just be me remembering through nostalgia goggles. Because this game looks, well, I do think that the art style of this game holds up surprisingly well for CG graphics on a Super Nintendo, which you'd think that would have aged really, really badly. But it didn't, honestly. The game looks pretty good for 1994. Like, really good for 1994.
I'm looking at it now, and 2 looks pretty much the same.
Ah, then it's just nostalgia goggles that I'm seeing it through then. But it's a little bit muddier than I remember, if that makes sense.
I think it's just the design overall. The problem is that there's not a lot of distinction in the different... like the different environments, so things tend to blend together a lot.
Yeah, I know you mentioned this a couple of times during your stream, especially during underwater segments, where like enemies would sort of blend in with the area around them. That's not really a problem outside of underwater levels, at least in my opinion, because like, I mean, you look at a Kremlin, he's gonna stand out against a cave, and stuff like that. But like, that also just comes down to the three environments this game has is jungle, cave, and underwater. And sometimes that cave has a factory in it, but that's really it. And so there's not a huge amount of level variety and snow, I guess. The snow levels, while I hate them, to play in them for the same reason I hate every ice level. Ice physics aren't fun. I don't like them. They are visually... a very stark contrast to the rest of the game. Even if that contrast has to come with bright white. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that. There's that. But, I don't know. I think, and I know this is a hot take. I think the game is good. But I think it's just that.
Yeah, it's just good. It's one of the games that is like, I would say, kind of pointless to go back to in this day and age, because you know, Country 2 did it better, Country Returns did it even better, Tropical Freeze did it even better. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it is.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
It's a game that while it pains me to say it for a game so integral to my childhood, like without this game's existence, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. It pains me to say it, but without this game's like revolutionary art style and graphics, probably wouldn't have gotten as much attention as it did.
Yeah, probably. And the graphics are really good for the time. They are revolutionary, genuinely extremely impressive.
Yes, especially on a... I don't think there's any Super Nintendo game that looks like this that wasn't made by Rare. There's like Killer Instinct, but again, that's Rare.
Yeah, I would agree.
So it's an accomplishment in its own regard there. Some of the level gimmicks, though, each level does have its own gimmick. I will give them that. While visual variety and that kind of thing is not really this game's strong suit, each of the levels at least feels kind of different. The problem is I only remember the gimmicks that made me frustrated or that I kind of didn't dig, like the level where the lights turn on and off.
Yeah, that one kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's and not because it was hard, but because like that level hurts my eyes a lot. And also, I don't like the idea of combining moving platforms with temporary pitch blackness.
I just don't think pitch blackness is ever really that interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. There's also the fuel level, which I think
I actually like that one.
See, it's not as hard as I remember it being, because like I said earlier, that's the level that I stopped at when I was a kid, which I made it way farther than I thought I did, might I add.
That's like the last level, isn't it?
That's the second last level, I think, of the entire game. So I was really close to beating that game as a kid, but I didn't, I guess. So, hey, I don't know. I don't like that level. I like it better than the other track level because it's a lot more interesting. There's at least stuff to do. There are stakes other than you are sitting on this moving platform. Let it go now. What other level gimmicks were there? There's the
I liked the red light green light one.
Yeah, the red light green light one I think is a level that I am actually, it's really stressful, but I am actually a pretty big fan of that
it's
level.
Not that stressful. It's pretty easy.
I found it stressful. I have anxiety. but yeah, it's I like that level. That was one of the levels I remembered from when I played as a kid. And I don't know. There's nothing else I can really think of. There's not a huge amount to talk about when it comes to this game, other than like what we covered at the start with, like, I mean, it changed Donkey Kong. It turned him into the character we know today, because before this, he was just some villain that was in an arcade game where the playable character of that arcade game went on to become way bigger than he was. And this game brought him back into, like,
being important at all.
Yeah, I would say DK is now, like, third place when it comes to most important current Nintendo characters, or most well-known, probably right behind Link.
I mean, I would argue Donkey Kong, as far as just well-known by the general public, would be higher up.
Possibly. I would say he's in the top three, definitely, though. It's those three for sure. And this game is largely the reason for that.
For sure.
So, good on them. There's also the creation of Diddy, which, man, do you have any idea, as a Donkey Kong fan, as a kid, when Diddy was finally announced for Brawl, I was so excited. I'm still so excited every time I remind myself that Diddy Kong is in Smash. I know a lot of people don't like him, and that's because they're babies, and I'll fight them to the death.
I had to be reminded, like, months after the fact that Diddy Kong had been confirmed to be returning in Smash 4.
You're all mean. I love Diddy Kong. He's so great. And this game introduced him, as I told this story in the preview as well. But it's worth renoting here. He was supposed to just be Donkey Kong Jr., but Miyamoto turned down their request to redesign Donkey Kong Jr. and said that's not what that character looks like. So either that becomes a new character, or you redesign, or you use the original design. And they said, well, we kind of like this design, so we're gonna make this a new character then. And I always went through knowing or thinking that Diddy was Donkey Kong's nephew, but apparently he is a quote-unquote nephew wannabe, according to the DK64
manual. I would honestly prefer he just be his nephew.
But that wouldn't make any sense. They're different species.
I would prefer it.
But they're different species.
When has that ever stopped them?
I mean, now? And of course, 2 introduces his girlfriend, Dixie, and then 3 introduces their cousin, Kitty, the least popular character in all of Donkey Kong lore.
I mean, I've never even played the third game, and I already know, like, oh, no, thank you, I'm good.
Like, people dislike Kitty a lot. And he's the only, I believe he is the only one that has not appeared in another game ever again. He and Chunky Kong, who is, funnily enough, his brother, I believe.
Oh.
But Chunky's 1,000 times better. So, yeah, it's a weird trilogy that is close to my heart. But this series, it has ups and downs, and Kitty appears to be a majority of the down sections of the series, according to most people. He doesn't even appear in Barrel Blast, I'm pretty sure. Neither does Chunky, but
I wouldn't say appearing in Barrel Blast is a badge of honor.
Yeah, but like Barrel Blast was an attempt at, for people that don't know, making a sort of Mario Kart style racing game. Not really Mario Kart, but like a racing game starring Donkey Kong characters. It was a bad idea and they shouldn't have done it, and it sucks. It's not a good game and nobody really remembers it very fondly. But like, even Lanky Kong shows up in Barrel Blast. Wrinkly Kong shows up in Barrel Blast as a ghost. They created new Kremlin characters before they let Kitty or Chunky be in Barrel Blast. That's how little people like them. But don't be mean to Chunky. He's great. I love him. I'm pretty sure at one point he was rumored to be an assist trophy in one of the early builds of one of the games.
I mean, they know.
I like Chunky Kong. I don't like Kitty Kong, though. I don't think anybody likes Kitty Kong. I think people are too harsh on him, but nobody likes Kitty Kong. And that's fine. I don't really have anything left to talk about when it comes to this game and playing it. It's good. I'm glad I got a chance to finally go back and beat it, but I can't say that I would ever like be in a hurry to go back and replay it again. I wouldn't be against it.
I am interested in the remainder of the trilogy, but don't think I'll ever replay this one.
That's fair. But you know what I will replay over and over and over again? The soundtrack to Donkey Kong Country, because this trilogy has a legendary soundtrack. All three of the games have fantastic, fantastic soundtracks by composers, for this one specifically, David Wise, Evelyn Fisher, and Robin Beanland, who would all go on to continue working on the franchise. Obviously, Grant Kirkhope would not get his shot at it until Donkey Kong 64, which we will get to talk about when we get there. But, man, this soundtrack is so good.
It's really, really good. Yes. There are a couple songs that I think are kind of eh. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the cave song, Cave Dweller Concert. On the whole, there's some really good ones, like Fear Factory. Fear Factory is like one of the coolest songs ever.
Personally, well, before we go any further, we gotta mention real quick that this is the game that introduced possibly one of the most well-known songs in video games, Island Swing.
Okay.
Entirely one of the most well-known songs of video games because of Smash, I might add, most likely. because there are at least like six or seven. There are almost as many remixes of this song in Smash as there are of the Zelda theme in Smash.
And they can't even decide what it's called.
Yeah, none of them have been able to decide what it's called, but it's fine because this song is fantastic. And it, like, those drums, man, this song was built to be iconic.
Yeah, no, it's actually incredible.
But my personal favorite song on the soundtrack actually is Treetop Rock. The boom, 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 that's just such a cool section. I love the instrumentation of that song. And I don't even remember what levels it plays in. I just really, really love it.
This plays in the levels that had the barrels that I hate. But it's real good. And it just got such a driving melody and rhythm to it that just, it's one of the most energetic songs in the game without like being peppy, so to speak. It's a really, really strong song.
And there's also, of course, the second most famous song from this game being Aquatic Ambiance.
A song that defined a genre of levels.
It sure did. And also, literally everybody that's ever looked at a video game remix has done a remix of this song. There are so many. If I had to guess, this is probably the most remixed song on OC Remix. I'm not going to go check to see if I'm right, but I bet you money it's at least in the top two.
I both love and hate this song. I love it because it is the perfect song for a water level. Like, it nails the entire concept of a water level and does a perfect job. And I hate it because now every water level sounds the same.
But do you have any others that you desperately want to name? I got a couple.
Go ahead with yours. I'll see if I can find any while we're thinking of it.
Well, I really like Semyon Segway.
Semyon Segway and the bonus level together make one of the best remixes in Smash.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. The bonus level music, great. Absolutely great. It's the real name of it escapes me. Bonus Room Blitz. Good song, but like the whole soundtrack is fantastic. Other than that, I don't have anything else to say outside of that. There's really not much more to say.
Gangplank Galleon.
Thank you.
Which I think for, like, how quickly the level itself gets into the K. Rool fight, it takes a little too long for the music to ramp up. Like, it's this weird tonal dissonance for the first 30 seconds.
So here's the thing. I like the first bit more than I like the second bit. Not that I dislike the second bit, but I like the more piratey feeling first. Speaking of piratey feeling, did you happen to notice on the map screen as you go up, like, out the outer map screen, as you continue on the game, the ship in the horizon gets closer to the island?
I did not know that, no.
Until you get to the end when you get... I didn't notice until, like, World 5. But yeah, it's getting closer to the island as you go. I've never noticed that. It's super cool.
That is pretty interesting.
But yeah, Gangplank Galleon. It's fun. It's a cool... We didn't talk about the boss. We didn't talk about Karul
okay.
at all.
It's okay at best.
It's an alright boss fight. I do like the beginning of what would become a rare staple, being the fake out credits. That would have been the first time that happened, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know if it was the first time ever, but yeah.
I also don't know. They could have done it in like Battletoads or something for all I know. But as far as I'm aware, it is the first time that Rare did that, and they would go on to do that in just about every other game that they make, including most famously Banjo-Kazooie and Tooie. And I don't know, I like that. I like that a lot.
Shout out also to Funky's Fugue.
Why have we... How did we forget that?
It's a really good song.
I love that
song. And also tells me that David Wise doesn't know what a fugue is.
Well, I believe that the other official name for this song is Funky the Main Monkey.
That's a better name.
But I'm not 100% on that. I might be thinking of the name of another Funky theme, because he shows up in all three games, I'm pretty sure. No, I don't think he's in two.
Funky the Main Monkey is his theme in Country 2.
Oh, so he is in 2. God, I need to replay 2 and 3. But yeah, this is probably my favorite of the Funky themes by far. And I'm actually very glad that this one made it into Smash, I'm pretty sure. Even though it's not a remix, it should have been a remix, but it's not.
It's the Mortal Kombat theme.
It is kind of the Mortal Kombat theme. You're not wrong. As much as it pains me to say it, you are not wrong. But that's all I have to say on Donkey Kong Country and its soundtrack.
Same. This is looking to be a shorter episode just because there ain't that much to say about it.
Yeah, it's a very historically significant game, but it's. This is, do not take this the wrong way. It's sort of like two rungs above Duck Hunt. Where it's like, it's very historically significant, and unlike Duck Hunt, I had fun playing it. But there's not a lot there to really talk about when it comes to talking about playing the actual game.
It's just because I didn't find any particular level memorable. I especially didn't find any of the bosses memorable.
Oh yeah, no, I hate the bosses, like, a lot. Dum Drum is my least favorite, even though he's super dumb. And like, I love that level of just, oh yeah, what's the boss of this level? It's just a fucking oil drum. Fuck you. But like, the boss is also just, all right, I'm going to dump out two enemies, kill them. All right, I'm going to dump out two more enemies, kill them now. Okay, here's two more. It gives me the same feeling as that one level, like the second last level of the game, or the third last, I think, where it's in World 6, some of the hardest levels throughout the game, and then you hit this one level where it's just like, here's a bunch of enemy spawners in a row. Go! And that's the whole level. And it's one of the most boring and easy levels in the game.
A weird difficulty curve, to be sure.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's got these weird things about it. But overall, Good game.
Good game. The start of a very, very good franchise.
That we will not be playing on this show.
We got
Returns.
We're
playing one more that is much, much later, but we won't be playing any more of the original trilogy, which is a shame, like we have said in the past. If Dixie Kong had been confirmed as an Echo Fighter, which I was holding out hope for.
Sakurai, just make an Echo Pack.
Yeah, just make an Echo Pack and put Dixie in the game. She deserves it.
I'll pay for it.
And then, like, erase all mentions of Tiny Kong that aren't the 64, which is Dixie. I think it's time to move on to the next game because we're entering a new era. but yeah, we were gonna play Donkey Kong Country 2 for Dixie if she got put into the game. Sadly, that did not occur, or at least it's not occurred yet. I suppose it's possible still. It's not going to happen, but it's possible. So let's move on to the next game. And that game representing fighter number one,
the OG.
It is the 1996 Nintendo 64 game, our first Nintendo 64 game, I'm home, Super Mario 64. And we're not alone for this one. Everybody, please welcome. He's been sitting in the corner silently as we talk about dumb old Donkey Kong. Please welcome Jordan from NWR. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be here. Dumb old Donkey Kong. Like I love that guy. Donkey Kong Country.
I also love Donkey Kong Country.
I love that game. I know people prefer the second one. I like the first one better.
I certainly am not recording this in the past and have totally played Donkey Kong Country.
Because Matt hadn't played it before at time of release. So we're here to talk about Mario 64. I think this is actually the first game of our entire lineup so far where everybody in this episode has not only played this game, but played it extensively.
I certainly have played it extensively. I've played it on the original console, the N64. I played the DS version, which I know people hate it, and I get that, but I don't think it's that bad. I really don't.
If you put the DS version on a modern controller and not like the D-pad on DS, it's excellent. It's
that,
the definitive version.
That's what it is, right? Yeah, it's the controller when it came out. But I mean, to be fair, when that game came out around the DS FATS launch, there wasn't much else to play, right? So it was kind of like, oh, you've got a re-release of Mario 64, or I don't know, Touch the Magic, that's pretty much, or the you could play the demo for Metroid Prime Hunters. that was about it. So
see, I was a little late to the DS party. I came in after Pokemon had already come out.
Right.
So, because I was a kid, I had to mow the lawn a lot to be able to talk my dad into, all right, fine, I'll go let you buy a DS because I wanted to buy it for Kingdom Hearts 358 Days Over 2. And one of the worst reasons to ever buy a console I've ever experienced in my entire life.
Yeah, I hear that. The DS, the original DS was really expensive. I think in Canada it was $249.99, and that was pricey considering there wasn't a lot. Again, there wasn't a lot of software out for the console until about a year later.
I don't know how that translates to American dollars, but even then, that sounds awful. Jesus.
Probably $199 would be my guess, or thereabouts. But
speaking of things that were probably expensive when they came out, I don't remember. I didn't buy mine. I got it for Christmas. Mm-hmm. The Nintendo 64. We have made it. Like I said, I am home. This is where I grew up, baby.
Here's me and Joe are the same age. Here's exactly how young we are. I received a Nintendo 64 with Super Mario 64 and Mario Kart 64 as a gift for graduating preschool.
I got mine for Christmas, and it was the version that came with Donkey Kong 64. But eventually we would end up buying Mario 64 and one of the Mario Parties, Mario Tennis, and Kirby 64 and Yoshi's Story.
Matt, I think the most impressive thing is that you got a gift for graduating preschool. Like, it's a big accomplishment, you know? Like, not everyone passes preschool, right? Like, some people get out back a year. You know, you got to repeat for first year preschool. I don't know.
You played You played with the blocks so good.
That I really just... did. My preschool was like,
thank you down, so you're allowed to go to kindergarten, right? So.
Yes. It was weird because I did preschool like at a church and not in my school like everyone else did.
No, hey, not weird. I did the exact same thing. Mine was at a church as well.
I didn't know this was a normal thing.
Is still in my city, but
I don't remember where I went to preschool. So we've all played Mario 64, obviously.
We have, yeah. You guys talked about when you first got your consoles. Like, I got my N64 about six... It launched end of 1995, I want to say. Is that right? Or 96?
Roughly, so. Yeah.
Yeah, and so my birthday, the following April after the launch of the console is when I got it. And I got it with Mario Kart. I got a green controller, I remember. I'd wanted the green one. You know, obviously, Mario Kart was pretty much all you needed for a little while, right? That game was so good. The multiplayer was so much fun. I'll be frank. I don't know if I ever owned Super Mario 64. I played it a ton. I played it a ton. I think we rented it a bunch. And I know when the console first came out and my friends had N64s before I did, they all had Mario 64. And that's where I played it kind of that second hand or kind of played it with other people. But I'm not sure that I ever owned the game until much, much later.
That's interesting. My experience with the game is mostly in my childhood. I've bought it on Virtual Console on pretty much every system that ever had it on Virtual Console, but I never really extensively played it. And now that I think of it, I'm not certain I ever finished it as a kid. This is
I
one of those things
never
where
I finished it as a kid.
This is one of those things where I put like 100 hours into it, but never actually finished it because you're a stupid kid who just like wanders around. This like sidetrack for a second. When I loaded up my old Banjo-Kazooie cart when I was in high school, I found I had 200 hours in it and hadn't gotten past the second world.
I was gonna say, Matt, when you were talking about Mario 64, I was gonna say, oh, like it's maybe a testament to that game that you can walk around for 100 hours and not beat it, but still be having fun with it. But now that you've said 200 and Banjo-Kazooie and you didn't even beat the second world, I think it's more you, and maybe not so much of the games doing well.
I think you might have been bad at games as a kid. But
I think
okay.
I was just a stupid kid.
Hey, if you're having fun, right?
Yeah, if you have fun, and like Mario 64 is still to this day like my favorite 3D Mario game. I don't think anything too surpassed it. I know a lot of people really like Sunshine. I'm looking forward to us getting to Sunshine because then maybe I'll be able to form a real opinion on it.
I mean, I like Sunshine, but to say it's better, that I would not say it's better.
I love Galaxy. I did like Odyssey for the most part, but like nothing has ever topped 64. Just it's still so good to this day. Even though it comes with all of the baggage of being an N64 game and being the
first big 3D game, really.
The first big 3D platformer, at the very least. The first successful 3D platformer, because there were attempts before this.
Not even necessarily first 3D platformer, like one of the first 3D games, period. Mm. Wrote the book on how to make a 3D camera.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does still hold up pretty well. I last played through it with the Wii U Virtual Console got Mario 64. I was really excited because I actually got to play the game portably. I had, and I don't know how this worked, but my bedroom and my office at my old apartment were kind of separated by a wall, and so I had my Wii U on one side of the wall, and I had my gamepad on the other. So they're pretty close in terms of distance, but there was still the interference of the wall, right? But I was able to play the whole game in bed with my Wii U gamepad, and you know it was a really, really nice way to experience that game. Like I'd love to play Mario 64 again on Switch if we ever get games that aren't NES games. We'll see, but I really enjoyed playing that game portably, the original portably, not the DS version, obviously. So that's kind of my most recent experience with the game, and you know what? I don't know. I obviously there's going to be some nostalgia to it. I think it does hold up still. I think it's still a pretty fun game to play.
I would say so.
That's the last way that I played it too. Was last time I played Mario 64 was my computer hard drive had died, and I was waiting to see if diagnostics could fix it or whatever, while my roommate was watching TV, and I just I played the whole game from start to finish in, like, I want to say 4 hours. Like, I just, well, I started it, and then...
Sounds like you didn't 120 star.
I won. I sure didn't, and never will.
I might 120 star this. We'll good. See.
Good luck with that.
I've always wanted to, but some of the worlds I don't love that much, and those are the ones that I just do one or two stars and then leave, you know, like...
See, that's me with the whole second floor except for Tall Tall Mountain.
Yeah, yeah. There's just ones I walk into, I'm like, oh, the second, the third star, fourth star, like, oh, those clues are really cryptic, and I don't feel like looking it up. I'm just going to run through it back to a place I know a little bit better.
Basically, if I felt like I could justify doing this entire... stream without going into Wet Dry World one time, I would. I hate that level so
much. What's the one that it's like a cavern? It's got like the fog, I think.
Hazy Maze Cave.
Yeah, that's the one I hate the most. When I get to that point, I'm like, you know, I'm done with going through all the stars at this point.
That's where the famous 0.5 A-Press video took
place. I know, and I did watch that video, and it made me want to play the game, but it didn't want to make me want to play that part of it. I was like, oh, I love everything else except this part.
It's like my single favorite video ever made, honestly. Yeah, it's perfect.
It's a really funny video.
So yeah, we're going to play Mario 64 for, I don't know, I definitely don't have a number for what time this would be for me playing this game.
Might be my first time actually finishing it, now that I'm really thinking about it.
It'll be my third time actually finishing it, but it will not be my third time starting it for sure.
I would say for me, yeah, probably fourth or fifth time starting it. Like, one really good memory I have about this game is when the N64 first launched, and, you know, there were, what, two or three games, right? Like Mario 64, Pilotwings 64, I think Blast Corps was around the launch, maybe? I can't remember. We rented the console. It came in like this big silver briefcase, and it came with Mario 64 and Pilotwings 64, and we just stayed up. Like, we had the kind of a back-to-back sleepover thing. Like, I stayed at his place, he stayed at my place, and we just played these games nonstop. And that's kind of where I really developed a fondness for that, those particular games. And I kind of regret that, or I wish Pilotwings 64 had made more of a an appearance in other places. But Mario 64, you can play it in a bunch of different places, and I'm looking forward to this playthrough. It's gonna be fun. It's a great game to come back to.
Yeah, I've been excited, not just because this means that we have left the... Look, I like the Super Nintendo. The Super Nintendo has some great games, and we played some really great games on it.
We played like three games on it.
We sure did. but like, this is where I live. I like, from here on, I'm just like, this is my place. These are my people. Everybody but Pikmin.
It's really interesting to me. I don't want to go too far on a tangent because we are already running a little long for a preview. But it's really interesting. You and me are the same age, but because you had a PlayStation 2 before you had like GameCube, your 64 memories last further into your life than mine. I identify the GameCube as my like real childhood console. So it's really interesting like how different our experiences are there.
Yeah, for me it was 64 and PS2 all the way.
For me, just with one more thing before we wrap up here, guys. For me, the 64 was always the multiplayer console. Like, I don't know that I played a ton of the single player experiences outside of Mario 64 on this console, but GoldenEye, Mario Kart 64, Smash Bros, these are the ones, like, hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours playing these games. That's what I remember most about the 64, because I had consoles, I'm a little bit older than you guys, I had consoles before that. Super Nintendo was probably, like, my big one, right? But I had an NES, I had an Atari and a television and stuff like that before, too, and I was kind of around the time of games, like, it was really NES, and then as soon as Super Nintendo came out, I was like, peak, like, childlike excitement for that console. And then when the N64 came around, I don't know that we ever owned a lot of games, but we certainly owned a lot of multiplayer games.
See, when at that time in my life, I didn't have any friends. So, if I couldn't play with my sister, I wouldn't play multiplayer.
I was just young enough that I wasn't allowed to play GoldenEye. It had guns in it.
Yeah.
My parents would not let me play it. But with that, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up this preview. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm very much looking forward to this episode. Have a lot of love for this game. And with that, you can find us on Twitter at Smashterpieces, on Facebook at Smashterpieces. Find me at on Twitter at The Debugga. You can find Matt at Grimace Duminous. Jordan, where can they find you?
At Riskman64, RISKMAN64 on Twitter.
And of course, I don't know about you, Jordan, but me and Matt will be streaming this, obviously. To break up the pattern that has been happening for the past two games, I will be the one on the NWR channel for this one, because I made Matt play the last two.
On the including Earthbound.
Including Earthbound, yes. For 3 months. So I guess I kind of owe him me playing at least one game on there.
I'm not sure if I'll be able to stream, but I'd like to know when you guys are streaming. So at least, Joe, if you're streaming, I'd love to hop in the chat sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Smashterpieces streams are every Thursday. Cool. Thursday evening.
On Nintendo World Report. Twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report. Meanwhile, Matt's streams will be on Grimace the Menace, just when you have time. There's no set date for
pretty
that,
much
I think.
We'll tweet about it and be like, hey, this is what I'm gonna do it.
Sounds good.
So, yeah. This will be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. With that, my name is Joe.
I'm Matt.
I'm Jordan.
And we will see you next time for our discussion on Super Mario 64.